Coming on December 8th at the TD Garden, it's the 20th annual tradition. And one of this year's inductees is former Revolution forward and current ESPN analyst Taylor Twellman. Hello again, everyone. I'm Mike Riley for 98.5 The Sports Hub and also the public address announcer at Gillette Stadium for the Revolution. Well, I'm grateful to have had Taylor join me this week to talk about his upcoming induction and, of course, the state of the New England Revolution as they prepare for MLS Cup playoffs on November 30th at Gillette Stadium. We also take a look around MLS and discuss the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying matches and much more. So let's get right into it, as really honored to be joined here right now by Taylor Twellman, ladies and gentlemen. He is here with me on the Revolution Audio Podcast for 98.5 The Sports Hub. Taylor, thanks so much for being with me here today.
No problem, Mike. How you doing, kid?
I'm doing great, my man. I'm doing great. And I know you've had a really busy stretch here the last few days. Yeah. You're back in the United States now?
Yeah, it's been an insane summer. Obviously, I think for all of us on some level, 2020 was an interesting and absurd year. And it kind of crept into 2021. But then when the European Championships came around, Disney and ESPN said, July 1st, you can travel. And it's hard to describe that first couple games where you're in the stadium, fans are there. It was surreal, you know, being in Wembley. England's in the European Championship final. Wow. And they're still not out of the pandemic regarding the vaccines the way we were. I mean, that will be a story I tell my grandkids for a long, long time, because that was one of the more electric, on edge crowds. I mean, if I'm being honest, I felt a little unsafe with just how it all went down. And then obviously coming back, doing the MLS season, and here we are. So it's been a great re-entry, I think, into the normal world, even though we all know it's still not normal yet.
I agree, man. And I'm so glad you said that, because I keep trying to tell myself all the time, like, you know what? I'm tired as hell doing this, but it's so much better than sitting on the couch.
Oh, my God.
Right? Dude. You know, we lost it. It was not good for our mental.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, Mike, we did 71 games, I think, off of a 65-inch monitor.
Oh, see, that's
8
not
feet. Like, and I'm not complaining by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think the listeners have any idea of, like, just what it meant to be in the stadium and then to have the fans back.
Right.
I mean, this sport is more so than any other. I get college football, maybe to a certain extent the NFL, but the NFL, we all can admit, the sport is made for television.
Absolutely.
It's not made for – but the pageantry of college football, and I think the pageantry of the fan – in soccer is something that I don't think people fully understand when you say it's the heartbeat of the sport. And yet, in all seriousness, when you look at the Red Sox playoffs, Mike, I think you would agree with me. That was the first time in a very, very, very long time that Fenway felt that electric.
It really did. Yeah. And it started with that Yankee game, and then it did pick up full.
Yeah, it just felt like there was – all of us were like, you know what? Who knows what's coming next? So we're going to enjoy all this. It's a long-winded answer of saying it's nice to be back in the stadium, and it's great to have the fans back.
Oh, absolutely. And definitely for the Revolution, too. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But just tell everyone briefly what you're doing right now, ESPN.
Yep, I've been at ESPN now for this – my 12th year at ESPN. Been doing their lead soccer analyst for most of their properties.
Awesome.
I'm also doing, you know, a lot more all sports stuff, which, you know, is important for a soccer guy to do that because it gets into the conversation. So I've really enjoyed my time in Connecticut, to say the least.
That's great. Good for you. The worldwide leader. Here he is right here, Taylor.
Well, that's self-proclaimed.
Yeah. Whatever works. You know what? Whatever works. So, you know, people here, obviously Revolution fans know of you. And for newer Revolution fans, you had a very good run with the team.
Mm-hmm.
What years were you with the club?
So I came back right after September 11th happened. I was in Germany. And it's well documented. So Google the story. I told the story about getting into a fight in the locker room with some Eastern Europeans that said we deserved it. I was 20 at the time. And it just, I grew up very quickly. I wanted to be in the United States. I didn't want to be over there. It had nothing to do with my playing career, quite honestly. I had thoughts of quitting soccer, going back to school and playing, you know, collegiate golf or baseball, and just saying, I just wanted to be in the United States because as a 20-year-old, September 11th happened. So I came here 2002. The Revs had my rights, and I was here. I would have played here probably for my entire career, if not going back to Europe, which there was a chance of doing that in 07, 08. But honestly, it was 2002, 2008. We had an unbelievable run. We had some fantastic players. I had the easiest job of them all, which was scoring goals because of the great team that we had.
Yep.
And we were so good that I'm the Jim Kelly of Major League Soccer, that I lost four MLS Cups.
I'm trying not to laugh about that. I'm sorry.
But you have to laugh. Because literally, I love – I mean, for the Revs fans listening, I'm sorry. I've told you this a million times.
Yeah.
I owe you – I don't know what I owe you, but I owe you a lot.
Right.
But truth is, I lost four MLS Cups. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, you know what? It's – even for folks that – did not watch Revolution matches here. And I want to ask you about that too in a moment too. The coverage for the Revs in general, Boston being a very difficult region, New England, of course, so try to squeeze in that limelight. But everyone knew who Taylor Twellman was. They knew you were a household name no matter what. And even if you weren't following the team, oh yeah, Taylor Twellman, Revolution. That was your brand right there. You were the face of the club, and you solidified yourself in history with the Revolution there, and you have a good place in the backbone of the organization.
It's a real good point though, Mike. And you, and the reason why I'm interrupting you is I don't think the listeners understand that in that time, the Red Sox hadn't won a World Series yet.
Yep.
The Celtics were absolute crap, and the Bruins were methodical and a very anemic. And so when you look at 0-2, yes, the Patriots beat the Rams in the 0-2 Super Bowl. I get all of that. I understand that. But there is a real time there. The Red Sox win in 0-4 against my Cardinals, by the way. But they win in 0-4. There was still time.
Yep.
The Celtics and Bruins hadn't done anything. And so when Jonathan and Robert in 0-2 – after my kind of like introduction to Major League Soccer, we get to the final, 65,000 plus are at the same, we lose. But Robert and Jonathan kind of motivated me, saying you could be the one that gets us into the Boston market that everyone talks about. So that year, those first 2 years, Mike, I actually know this. It's a record for the amount of appearances.
Wow.
In Major League Soccer. And it was over 75 appearances I did in 2 years. And a lot of people were like, you know, even my teammates were like, what are you doing? I'll never forget the Crafts kind of saying I needed to without telling me.
Right.
And so a lot of those unpaid, but there was a real chip on my shoulder to say, whoa, wait a minute here. Like, why aren't we in the conversation? Celtics are absolute crap.
Right.
And the Bruins aren't winning. So, like, who's to say we can't be the third team, knowing that the Red Sox were at the peak because it was 80-plus years they had won. Patriots in the NFL were finally hitting their precipice of, you know, really taking over the sports climate. So I felt like I was really motivated. And at times I didn't want to do a lot of those appearances. But I felt like it was, for lack of a better word, Mike, an obligation. An obligation to the sport, and more importantly, an obligation to the Kraft family and to this market, because when my grandfather won two World Series with the Yankees, he played Major League Baseball for 12 years. He loved Boston. He loved New York, but he loved the fact that they were intelligent fans. They were educated, but they didn't hold back. And so I kind of really look forward to this, have it listen to him and talk about it. And then I started to think, well, hold on here. We could be good, even though we just lost at home. So that's the answer of why I felt so obligated to say, no, you're going to know my name, and you're going to know it's a soccer player affiliated with the Revs. And that was good enough for me, because that means I was infiltrating the quote-unquote top four major sports.
It worked, man. It worked. I mean,
it did.
Your jersey top-selling for the Revolution. People, kids wearing it all the time.
Yep.
not even following them, people in general, but they knew Taylor Twellman, and it worked, and you get a good brand, and you should be really proud of that for what you did and community work and all that stuff. And, you know, here we are. Let's go into 2021, Taylor, as you mentioned. The crowd is back. It's back at Gillette Stadium. We had 31,000 people at the regular season finale. Were you there for that? Did you attend that?
No, game? So we were in Nashville doing that game. So the final day of Major League Soccer, they do Decision Day, and all the Eastern Conference teams play at the same time, all the Western. So I couldn't get there. Naturally, I had it on my iPad. I wanted to see the celebration. It's been a fantastic year. It's hard to describe from someone like myself and from the group of players that I played with, the Jay Heapses, the Steve Ralstons, the Shawrie Josephs, the Matt Reeses, Joey Franchino, the guys that were there for a very long time, Jeff Lorenowitz, Michael Parkins, you can go up and down the list, Avery John. But you just think about those, and we didn't win. We got there. We were literally there. We were the team that everyone hated to play against the moment August 15th came around. It happened every year. And we get to the final, we lose. I get all that. But to have a training facility of $35 million built, to now enter, and listen, this is no secret, the Crafts were operating Major League Soccer in 2010 as if it was 1998.
Wow.
And they even did it with us. We didn't have a ton of resources. Jonathan knows this, so I'm not saying anything that's like so forthcoming. But we were the Bad News Bears. We were at the bottom of the barrel. Yeah. Playing on turf, playing in that stadium, and yet we had a great group of guys. To see it now, using Gillette Stadium for a home field advantage, even though we all know, and I'm public, I can't stand turf. Turf needs to go away. However, 31,000, winning the supporter shield, the training facility, all of a sudden, now the conversation is different around the league, and that is something that all of us so wanted to happen. Did it take a little bit longer? Sure. But give Jonathan and Robert a ton of credit for at least doing it, not staying, you know, with their guns, so to speak, and say, no, we're still going to do it our way. They needed to change. They've changed. Man, this is fun. This is cool.
It really is. And, you know, obviously we haven't talked about him yet, but Bruce Arena. I mean, you know, that's the other thing, Taylor. People, I've told other people on this podcast that we've had here, that, you know, didn't follow soccer or not really into it so much, but you knew the name Bruce Arena, and you knew that was a big deal when the Crafts opened their wallet to, you know, lock him in as the new head coach and sporting director of the team. And it's made a difference. It's paid off.
Absolutely. It has, you know, but we do need to be, you know, before that, Carlos Heel was here, and I want to make this abundantly clear. If Carlos Heel stays healthy, he would be the best player in Revolution history.
I agree.
One of the best players ever. And that, listen, and I played with Shawrie Joseph and I played with Steve Ralston, two of the best players this league has ever seen. Yet Carlos Heel's different. There's just a different element to how he plays. And yet what Bruce Arena has done to galvanize this group is something that all of us that have been in the sport, I played for Bruce. And a lot of people remember Bruce is the one that cut me. I was the last player cut from the 06 World Cup. And yet it doesn't matter to me because my job's to analyze it. Bruce is a no-brainer. If you want to bring in someone that understands how to manage, understands success from top to bottom, he brings in Kurt Arnolfo, who's been unreal for people listening to this that want to get into the weeds, the youth academy, the ability with USL2, the Revs 2 for USL team. Chris Tierney's come in, fantastic player, great career for the Revs. He's now ingrained within the system. Then you look at the assistant coaches, Richie Williams, Dave Vanderberg, Hitchcock. All of these guys have then come in, but Bruce knows how to win, and he's not going to do anything. If he doesn't win, he's going to fix it. Well done by the Crafts, and a hat tip to Bruce Arena and his staff for how quickly it turned around.
And, you know, how quickly it turned around, supporter shield.
Yeah.
But why does the shield mean so much? And, you know, the cup does mean so much more, obviously. But what do you think is harder to win, the supporter shield or MLS Cup, Taylor?
It's supporter shield because it's more games. You can go on an unbelievable run in 3 to 5 games and win MLS Cup the way it's set up right now, especially with the international break and the huge amount of, you know, rest days that anyone could get hot at any time. Winning the Supporters Shield is more difficult. I'm not saying it's more important because the American culture is set up that way, where MLS Cup is what dictates the champions of this tournament. Now, I think as this league evolves, the World Cup comes, Liga MX and that relationship comes, who knows? That may change, and we don't know what that looks like. But right now, when you're talking to me on November 16, 2021, MLS Cup is more important, but that doesn't mean it's harder, because it's not. Because the Supporter Shield is difficult because it's such a different scenario. I think it's important. You asked the initial question. I think it's important because it's the supporters.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's important that people understand that. Like, we want to go from 0 to 100 in this country, and yet the league's only been around 26 years, Mike.
It's a baby.
Right? So, like, we've got to have some kind of, like, I think understanding that it takes time to build traditions, to build history, you know, to build rivalries. At times, sometimes this league tries to manufacture rivalries. It doesn't need to. It naturally will come as this league grows. So I just think the Supporter Shield's awesome because of the importance of the supporter culture in the sport. And I think that's why even in 2020, with how crazy that year was, the Philadelphia Union were still given the trophy, and I thought rightfully so.
Yeah, no, they did get it, but obviously they did not win MLS Cup. And like you said, that's American culture right there.
It's, yep.
Pretty much you're remembered for that last win, whoever is the champion right there, and that's a big thing. And, you know, here we are around MLS Cup playoffs beginning this week. Do you have any take who are the top teams to look out for in the Eastern Conference that the Revs should watch out for? And we do know that the Revs will be playing either Atlanta or New York City FC November 30th. So who should we watch for in the Eastern Conference? And do you think they'd be better off matched up against Atlanta or NYCFC?
That's a really good question. It's a really good question because now with how the schedule has turned out, the Revs play November 30th. So now Atlanta and New York City now get 8 days, which is different, right? So now they're going to be rested. Look at the Western Conference. Colorado is going to play on Thanksgiving. And the winner of the Portland-Minnesota game only gets 4 days. And so now the number one seed for the Revs, you kind of lose the advantage of having to, of that team having to play less than a week away. Excuse me. And I think that's a disadvantage to the Revs. And what I mean by that is whoever wins Atlanta, New York City, they're going to be in rhythm. They're going to already had played a playoff game while the Revs are at 21-plus days off. Now, the 21-plus days off works because Adam Buxa is dealing with a broken foot. He's going to be available now because it's given him enough time. But there's going to be some rust. There's going to be a lot of that. So how Bruce Arena has managed this time, I know he's trying to play a couple games, that's going to be extremely important. I said it right around October 15th. No, excuse me, September 15th. I'm not sure I want to play New York City.
Really?
And it's not technically my opinion. It's when I talk to every other manager within Major League Soccer, they are brought up consistently about a team that is deep and a team that is very dynamic in a variety of ways. Now, in saying that, Mike, Keaton Parks had a blood clot. He's now out for the year. That's a massive loss for them for the balance in the midfield and what they have. Tinnerholm's out after tearing his Achilles. So now that depth is going to be tested. Atlanta's an interesting one. As explosive as their names are and the pedigree of their players, they've played 15 games against playoff teams. They've won only one this year. And so I don't know. Atlanta's way more difficult to predict. New York City has had some really good games against the Revs. They may not have gotten the result. But neither here nor there, it's on turf. It's at home. It's at Gillette Stadium. Unequivocally, the Reds will be the favored team in that, and they should win that game.
And, you know, you talk about the Atlanta setup earlier this year, Taylor. Revolution did have them at Gillette Stadium, a 2-1 win, and then in July, a 1-0 win at Atlanta. That was during that time period where Matt Turner was in the qualification, I believe, for the national for the World Cup.
Yeah, I think he was in Gold Cup.
Gold Cup, you're right. Yeah, sorry. Brad Knighton stepped in, who did a really nice job during that.
Played with Brad. Brad's a great guy for the locker room and a good guy to have, you know, when you need someone to step in.
Yeah, he is awesome. I love Brad. And the Revs split with NYCFC this year.
Yes, they did.
So there you go. And including a 2-0 shutout at Yankee Stadium, but they got him back here on 9/11 against NYCFC, a 2-1 win. That was a hard-fought battle. That was a tough one.
Yeah, I think it's important that that game's at Gillette Stadium because Yankee Stadium becomes an X factor, and only New York City enjoys that, and they're now just back into that swing of having to play games at Yankee Stadium. So I think it works in Rev's favor that that game's at Gillette. However, New York City or Atlanta United are going to have 8 days to prepare for that game. And now all of a sudden, fatigue and all that, that should be part of this playoff equation, is no longer there for the number one seed to take advantage of.
So I'm with you on that, like with the NYCFC situation there, where they have that little upper hand with the momentum and so forth. The other thing that works in their favor too, Taylor, is they're in the same weather pattern as New England, right? Yeah. So Atlanta, you're indoors, a little warmer. You got to have that weather to your home field advantage and take advantage of that. And also the fact you don't have to travel, which is big. And I think that the whole, the way I'm perceiving things around the Revolution front office and so forth, if they don't win MLS Cup this year, it's a failure.
Absolutely. But it should be. You can't set a record for how you won the Supporter Shield. It's no different than LAFC, if I'm not mistaken, in 2019 when they set the record. And then they beat their rivals, LA Galaxy, with Zlatan, but then lose at home to the Seattle Sounders. Listen, it was the Sounders' best performance in their franchise history all the way back to the NASL. But that's not it's a disappointment. Absolutely. If the Reds don't win, it's a failure, and as it should be, because the way this roster is constructed, the way it's lined up for them, Bruce Arena knows it's win or a failure. Absolutely.
And, you know, Bruce Arena right now, and here he is with MLS, it's almost set up like the NFL playoffs, one and done. That's it. You don't know more of that. You played under Steve Nichol, and MLS has changed a little bit since then. Back when you were playing, it was
home and away. Sometimes it was – the first year we played in 03 was actually three games.
Yeah.
So you played three games in 1 week, and the first team to 5 points is the one that advanced. It's part of the growth of Major League Soccer and all that. I still can't figure out where I am on MLS Cup. I love the one-off games because I know the jeopardy that's on the line – kind of suits the American audience that may not be fully engaged into soccer with the home and the aways.
Yep.
But it does feel a little off that the whole season comes to this moment and then it's one off. But regarding television and creating interest, you're not going to find a better argument for it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's going to be very interesting to see if the Revs can get the three games to glory. That's what they need, and three wins to glory. That's the whole point why they have the home field advantage here. CONCACAF, let's talk about that quickly here. U.S. and Mexico. U.S. versus Mexico. Three straight wins right there. Matt Turner and Tejon Buchanan for Canada as well. Yeah. You covered both all these right here. Yep. What do you got to say about that?
Matt Turner's a fantastic story. And mainly because he was told he wasn't good enough. Then he picks up soccer late, didn't really want to play soccer, gets into it. He's got a real chip on his shoulder to prove himself. Just a great story of perseverance, but also taking advantage of the opportunity. And it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if he's over in Europe before it's all said and done. Tejon Buchanan came out of nowhere, but there was a higher ceiling there when he came into Major League Soccer, and it took him a little while to get going, but this guy's a special one. And that's what I mean by the timing is now. And what the Revs fans don't understand, as many of them were upset with my take, listen, you have to sell Tejon Buchanan. If you're going to solidify what you're doing here in New England and what you're trying to accomplish, you have to sell him. But trying to replace him is going to be difficult, because what people don't get is he's a $7 million player that was sold, but you kind of, in a weird way, found him out of nowhere, develop him. It doesn't cost you that much. To find that replacement right now on the open market is at the minimum $7 million, Mike.
Yeah.
And so you have to take advantage of the fact that he's on loan, he's staying here. But just great Revolution stories for just, you know, using this franchise – putting them on the map while also putting themselves on the map. It's just a real sign of the Revolution growth on the world market.
And Turner, you know, versus Zach Steffen for the number one spot there. Any input or any insight on that, rather?
Turner for me should play. Turner for me is playing consistently. Zach Steffen is not.
Yeah.
However, Zach Steffen had one hell of a game against Mexico. And Zach Steffen is Greg Berhalter's guy. And so no matter what happens from Matt Turner, as long as Zach Steffen is fit and capable of playing, then Greg's going to go with him. That's not a secret. I'm on the record, and I've always been on the record. My goalkeeper needs to be playing consistently if I'm going to play him. Just has to be. I don't want a guy that's – I don't care if you're training at Manchester City. I don't care if you're playing at Barcelona. Playing games is a completely different situation than training, even though that's training at the highest level that you're ever going to get. But Zach Steffen, you got to tip your cap to him because he had himself two really good saves against Mexico, and he's going to get the start again here against Jamaica.
It's going to be interesting. That'll be really good stuff to watch here. A couple more things, Taylor, and we'll let you go here. But I do want to ask you back to the Revolution here. What makes this 2021 team different for better or worse compared to the great teams of the 2000s that you were talking about couldn't get over that hump and win MLS Cup? What makes them different?
Well, the league's different, Mike, in the sense that you are now allowed to go spend three players that don't count against your salary cap. So that's different in the sense that you now have Gustavo Bow, you now have Adam Buxa, and you have Carlos Heel. But when you look at the way Bruce Arena has built this team, it's eerily similar to our teams in the past. Because when you look at how he's built it through college players, domestic players that have a great understanding of what works in this league, a very good understanding of the locker room and camaraderie, a lot of guys, you know, journeymen within this league that he's used to his advantage, and then the cherry on top with Carlos Heel, Gustavo Bow, and Adam Buxa. So it's very similar. It's very similar to how this was constructed when we were playing. It's just different salaries and the mechanism of it. But at that one point when we were in the early 2000s and mid-2000s, Clint Dempsey, Pat Noonan, Shari Joseph, Steve Ralston, I mean, three of those four were called in regularly for the U.S. Men's National Team and World Cup qualifiers. Shari was playing World Cup qualifiers for his country and would have played for the United States. Then you had myself. And so, and then you throw in Michael Parker's Jeff Lorenowitz. You could see why that was successful, but to directly compare is difficult because of the salaries and how it's interesting. I think this is a special team, and a lot of it is on the shoulders of Carlos Heel because I think he's one of those special, special players this league has ever seen.
Yeah, he is the catalyst of the Revolution team right now, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this all pans out here on November 30th. And like we mentioned, hopefully at least the three home games, and all of them right here would be at Gillette Stadium. I want you to talk about the Think Taylor Foundation.
Yep.
And tell everyone about your work around concussion awareness. You were actually at Gillette Stadium back in September for that as well. Tell the people about it, Taylor.
Yep. I'm very grateful for the Kraft family allowing me to use their platform to spread the message of just concussion awareness and education. The one thing I'm not trying to do is to end sports and end sports participation because it's desperately needed for our youth. But the education and awareness of traumatic brain injuries in sports has to change. The education tools are there. We know way more than when my career ended in 2009 due to a concussion. And so it's my job to spread that. And we've had over 5 million kids in the United States take the Think Taylor pledge. And all I'm trying to do, Mike, is to kind of ask for more accountability and ownership of your brain and stop trying to point fingers to everyone else. So the more educated these kids are, the better decisions that are going to be had, and the parents and coaches can get the hell out of the way. So that's kind of just where I'm at with it. And so far it's been good.
That's awesome. Good for you, Taylor. And do you have a website or anything?
Yeah, thinktaylor.org.
Okay, thinktaylor.org. Okay, and social media, obviously,
yep.
Twitter and
all
Instagram.
The same.
Yeah, okay, wonderful. That's great. Yeah, I think that's really important for you to do that. And I think a lot of people, soccer can be kind of a sneaky, dangerous sport with the...
Well, the other thing, too, is my kids, the girls, right? So if I'm going to educate the masses, there's one sport that I can do it for both boys and girls, and it's soccer. Because if I'm only going to look at American football, that doesn't do enough of a job. And if I'm only going to look at like gymnastics and field hockey for girls, that doesn't do it. A lot of kids play soccer, both boys and girls. And so that's why I'm using this sport to be the vehicle to just educate, you know, the masses.
That's fantastic. Good for you, Taylor. And I know you're really excited, as many people in the all of the Revolution organization is, and everyone in general that saw you here on the pitch for the Revs during your career, to be going into the tradition December 8th at the TD Garden. Taylor, what an honor for you. You got to be really excited for this.
I am. You know, lucky for Kevin McHale, Angela, and David Ortiz that they're going in with me, Ben Coach as well, right? You know, because it solidifies the class, right? Like, because they needed me to do that.
You were right there, man.
Mike, I got to tell you, it's a little surreal just because, you know, there's very little soccer representation in that museum. And so for it to happen, and this is on the 20th year, and I was number 20, like all of it. Just honestly, it's really cool. I'm proud to represent the Revs. I'm proud to represent more so the Kraft family and just all the hard work that everyone behind the scenes has put into the Revolution. And if the Revs are hosting MLS Cup that week, that just kicks off that week at a great time. If December 8th at the TD Garden, and if the Revs are hosting MLS Cup that weekend, I mean, Mike, it's kind of set up perfectly, isn't it?
Home run. It's a home run all around. So, yeah, I think everyone should go and buy their ticket, support Taylor for the tradition at TD Garden. One more thing I forgot to ask you. What do you think of the new Revs logo?
I love it, dude.
You do like it, huh?
I love it. And the reason why I love it is that they asked the fans. Mm-hmm. It's not another FC or SC. Yep. They kept the Revolution. I love it because you can build tradition. There's going to be stories when the soccer-specific stadium is eventually built. This is all part of the process. I mean, listen, I love the old logo, but anyone listening to this is like, yeah, but no one else. Liverpool's changed their logos 4 times. And everyone on social media wants to tell me, well, they don't do this around the world. What are you talking about? Of course they have. Like, yeah. It's part of what it is. The Yankees have changed their logo and evolved it. I just think it's I get off my soapbox. I love it. I think it's really cool. And I love the fact that it still has the Revolution and it's not an FC. It's not an SE. So there's still the uniqueness to it.
Yeah, when I got the background on it, when they showed me, you know, how
– right.
Why they changed and everything, it's just so much easier because that crayon logo, I mean, as cool as it is, it's so 90s.
Right.
But everything else has a crest now. All the other teams have a crest.
But, Mike, to your point, though, you bring the crayon back in 10 to 15 years, and that's your retro stuff, and now
exactly.
you're creating a brand. But people don't understand the Portland Timbers, the Seattle Sounders, and the Vancouver Whitecaps. I am an NASL baby. My father played 10 years in the NASL.
Did he really?
It's the same name.
Yeah.
Mike, it's the same name.
Yeah.
So my dad's told Timber stories. I tell Timber stories. He tells Sounder stories. See what I'm saying? So now – our kids and our grandkids are going to tell Revolution stories of some level, and it stays the name and it stays the same, and it's consistent. And then you build in your retro gear and you build all of that in. It was the right move from them. And I know it needed some convincing even internally with the Revolution brass, but good on them to change it. Cause I think there is a cool factor to that while keeping the history with it. And I think they did it well.
Yeah, 2-3 year project, and here it is. It all wrapped up here. Perfect timing, too. Right in time for the postseason, while there's more attention on them. And
well, there's no better way to introduce a new logo when you set the record for most points in a regular season. I'm not sure I would do it if you finished last place. So they
right.
Picked your timing perfect.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It all fell into place. And you know, I know you mentioned real quick. Your grandfather played for the Yankees. Won a
yes,
couple
he did.
World Series. So yeah. What year and what was his
position? So it would be, you're going to kill me. It was, I'm going to say in the early to mid 50s.
Okay.
So he is known. So if you go to Cooperstown, he is known for pinch running for the midget, Eddie Goodell. And I'm not, I'm being politically correct. So no one gets me in trouble. That's exactly how you refer to it. But the St. Louis Browns had Eddie Goodell. He took the at bat. He walked. My grandfather pinch ran for him. But I'll tell a quick story about my grandfather because this is kind of Boston lore. I went and hung out with Nomar Garciaparra, batting practice, all this with the Red Sox. And I'm messing around, having the time of my life, because I could have played pro baseball if I wanted to out of high school. Peter Gammons is over there. Peter Gammons comes over, Mike. No joke. And he says, hey, I've been told that your grandfather is Jim Delsing. Peter told me two complete stories of games at Fenway that Peter was at for the Yankees. And I mean at-bats, stats, what happened in the game, what kind of player he was. And, Mike, I got so choked up because when I remember calling my mom, that was, like, Nomar to this day jokes with me. He's like, you don't even remember, like, being on Fenway. I was like, no, Peter Gammons told me stories about my grandpa.
That's
awesome. He kept the newspaper article. There was a doubleheader. They played the Red Sox when they were leaving. It was the start of the big dig. And it's on the front page of the Boston Globe, and he kept the newspaper. And I'm like, because we called him Chief. And I was like, Chief, the big dig's still going on. Like, it was 2003. Right. I'm like, the big dig's still going on. It takes me an hour to get to the airport. He both World Series with the Yankees. He was traded either to the Yankees halfway through or traded away. So when Mickey Mantle got brought up, my grandfather was traded to the Detroit Tigers. And then when Al Kaline was brought up, he was traded, if I'm not mistaken, to the St. Louis Browns or the Washington Senators. So there's a lot of stories in there. Based on the metrics, just so listeners know, he would have won three gold gloves at center. Based on that, that was like what Peter Gammons in like Major League Baseball archives had told me at the time. It was really cool. It was my mom's dad. He loved every bit of it.
It's amazing.
And it was awesome. It was cool.
And I'm sorry, your grandfather's name again?
It was Jim Delsing. D-E-L-S-I-N-G. And Delsing. I'm not a Yankees fan. I need to make this abundantly clear. I don't care if I got family ties there. I am not a Yankees fan.
Are you a Red Sox fan?
I am through and through a St. Louis Cardinals fan. Because
that's why I did say that.
Yeah. However, this year, I've now lived in Boston longer than any other place in my life. So, yeah, like when the Red Sox are on, I'm kind of rooting for them. But 04 and 07, I wish Red Sox would die.
Yeah, I hear you. But most importantly, Taylor, you can say it. If you can say it, you're a Revolution fan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. I knew that. Yeah.
But, Mike, here's the problem.
Yeah.
2014 MLS Cup, I had to call the Revs against the LA Galaxy. And everyone to this day says, what's the most difficult game you've ever done? And they're expecting me to say, you know, the games where 10 million people watched in the World Cup and that kind of crap. Yeah. Uh-uh. That was the hardest game. I wore everything I wore was black and white because I didn't want the viewer to understand. And listen, the Revs fans, listen, I've been as critical of the Revs, if not more critical than anyone else.
Right.
I've got to be transparent. I get that.
Oh, but
that, Mike, that game that year, I'm telling you, was almost impossible.
Yeah, that's
– I lost two MLS Cups to the LA Galaxy. My former club is playing them for the third time. A former teammate's coaching them, Jay Heaps. Like, the whole thing was like, oh, God.
You had the same similarity as Tommy Heinsohn did.
Yes.
When he was – right? When he was doing the color commentary for CBS – national television when the Celtics played the Lakers.
Yep.
Can you imagine Tommy Heinsohn trying to say Magic Johnson?
So, Mike, do you know Tommy Heinsohn and Mike Gorman and I called an entire half of Celtics basketball?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So NBC Sports Boston announced that they were doing the Revs games, and that year they were like, we want to promote it.
Yep.
And I was like, all right. So I sat down. It was supposed to be basically a five-minute hit. And both Mike and Tommy talk about weird, like, symmetry for how my career was going to go because I literally got a concussion, like, 2 months later and the career was over.
Right.
But I remember sitting there and Mike goes, do you want to stay? And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. Like, of course I will. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to talk a lot because Tommy's doing – it was – I literally sat there and was like, oh, this could be fun. But Tommy afterwards, when we were, you know, just shooting it, and he mentioned that. I said,
awesome?
What's been the most difficult time? What was your best time? He goes, well, the answer is the same. It was Celtics, Lakers, CBS, and yet I had to call the Celtics, Lakers on CBS. And I'm like, oh, boy, that's not
There you go.
And then 6 years later, I did the exact same thing. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You got to be right down the middle. And that's
I'd rather have the crappy day and have the Revs fans in MLS Cup and have them join. And I'll take the shtick online and all that. But it could happen again this year because, you know, MLS Cup is on ABC in 2021 and it may be in New England.
We'll see what happens. Hopefully you'll be here December 11th for that. And hopefully we can get you here for that whole week with the tradition coming up December 8th. And Taylor, thank you so much for joining me here today. I really appreciate it. This is great. And we're looking forward to MLS Cup playoffs beginning this week.
Yep. Should be fun, Mike. Good to hear your voice, Mike.
Once again, my thanks to Taylor Twellman. And give Taylor a follow on Twitter. He's at Taylor Twellman. Check out his fantastic work on ESPN, as well as his focus on concussion awareness and education at thinktaylor.org. Now, before the Revs get to host the Eastern Conference semifinal on November 30th, congratulations in order to Bruce Arena, a finalist as MLS Coach of the Year, along with Tejon Buchanan, a finalist for Young Player of the Year, Carlos Hill, a finalist for two awards, Comeback Player of the Year, and MVP, and Matt Turner, a finalist for Goalkeeper of the Year. Also, a big congratulations to former Revs standouts Shalry Joseph and Clint Dempsey, finalists for the Class of 2022 at the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And don't forget tickets to the November 30th playoff game against either Atlanta or New York City FC are available now by visiting revolutionsoccer.net or by calling 877-GET-REVS. My name is Mike Riley. Follow me on Twitter at Sarge985. The Sports Hub account is at 985 The Sports Hub. Thanks again for listening, and go Revs!
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.